Welcome to Public Safety Talk Radio, the podcast for all of our heroes in public safety, including law enforcement professionals, firefighters, EMTs, corrections officers, healthcare workers, and more. The show is produced by the POC Way and is founded upon its Soundness Initiative. This episode is sponsored by AmTrust Warranty and Specialty Risk, a provider of line-of-duty death loan protection through many of our POCUA institutions. Hi, I'm Ken Vayner, your host for Public Safety Talk Radio, and we have a really intriguing guest here today on a subject that we don't talk much about, that we need to talk more about, which is, you know, what happens to our wounded officers, especially in the line of duty. We have Dr. Patricia K. Reyna. Did I get that last name right?
You did it.
All right, perfect. I'm doing something right today. She is an injured law enforcement and caregiver advocate. She is doing some amazing things in terms of research and focus on law enforcement officers, firefighters, and other first responders, as well as our veterans that have sustained traumatic brain injuries, post-concussive syndrome, and catastrophic injury in the line of duty in the United States. I did have to read that because there was no darn way that I was going to be able to do post-concussive syndrome right off the cuff here. Doctor, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
We're thrilled to have you. You know, you're doing some amazing things, you know, some that I've seen and some that I've heard about. You know, but before we even, you know, really dig into the research, you have a unique story that I can't do justice to. You know, can you share some of that story?
Absolutely. So I married my high school sweetheart and we had three beautiful children, and he was a North Carolina State Highway Patrol trooper. Master Trooper, loved it, loved his job. He absolutely loved it. He'd be out there today. He was injured in the line of duty on November 23rd, 2009. We just passed 13 years.
Yeah.
And he sustained a brain injury and post-concussive syndrome. He was rear-ended at 75 miles an hour. While he was investigating a collision, it put the trunk in the back seat. It hit just enough on the driver's side that it also spun him back out into traffic. And they said that the impact of being hit at 75 miles an hour and the spin severed nerve endings in his brain. And he has required 24/7 care since then. So what I discovered that I didn't know was a lot of things. I think there's a common misconception in the country that if we have a law enforcement officer that gets injured catastrophically or otherwise in the line of duty, that they will be taken care of for the rest of their lives. And that it's just something that's automatically done.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not what happens. And they must, a lot of them have to fight for their care. In the case of my husband, he was unable to advocate for himself. And so that fell to me and our kids, who are wonderful, beautiful people. At the time, we had a son that was just in his first year of college, a daughter that was 5 days away from being 16 and getting her driver's license, and our 12-year-old daughter. And I pretty much said, son, you're on your own. The 16-year-old became in charge of our youngest one for a while because it was a nightmare experience. And many times what happens with these injured officers, and this is from my own personal experience and from other officer families that I've talked to across the country, is that they're thrown into this workers' compensation system that really cares nothing about them as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And their care is, it would be a wonderful thing if the organizations that are formed actually or do what they're supposed to do, as in that system was set up to take care of our injured people no matter what profession they were in. But it's turned into a thing that I truly, in my opinion, is that they deny care, they delay care, and then they don't pay for care, and either way you don't get it or it's significantly delayed. So he did not get rehab. It took me 13 months to get him into a brain injury doctor. They had us discharged from the first hospital after 3 days, and they sent him home, and he was in no shape to be home. but there was and no help came. So just fighting through this, and this was with attorneys. We had two. It took me 13 months to get him back into a brain injury doctor where they could actually evaluate his injury and what he needed. So just, I'll fast forward this a little bit. So, you know, I never left his side. I stayed with him. And when we were discharged, I was told from the social worker that his care would be set up. And so when we got home and no care was set up, I called up and workers' compensation told me that they were not going to take care of him for the rest of his life, that they didn't care what the doctors had said that he needed for me to go back to work and leave him home alone. So it was very devastating to me to finally have a little bit of hope that, okay, that we know exactly, you know, the significance of his injury. We knew that he was going to require 24/7 care for the rest of his life, but that they were going to put these supports in place. And my thing is, with our injured across the country, and I don't care what injury they have, how catastrophic it is, they deserve a life after injury. And I don't care if they need help doing that. So it's been a very long process of trying to obtain care for someone that was obviously injured protecting the citizens of North Carolina and in this country right here at home. So fast forward a little bit from that kind of experience, which let me just say we're still in the middle of, but nevertheless, we continue to press forward. I had discovered, well, before my husband was injured, I had put him through college. And then I said, when our son goes to college, because we were high school sweethearts, only one of us could go at the time. And I said, I'll put you through. Then I had three, we had three beautiful kids. And I said, I'll go when our son goes. So I had started college that fall. And then he was injured about 3 months later. So that put a stop on my education. So at about 2.5 years in, I thought, if I don't do this now, I'll never do it. So I enrolled in a community college and I enrolled in a university across the country simultaneously, you know, dually enrolled. And I took about 7 courses a semester at one and 3 or 4 at the other. And within 13 months, I rolled it all into one and I have my BA. A couple of years later, I was able to go back and get my master's. And then I obtained my second master's and my doctorate at the same time. I considered it therapy. It actually was a way for me to be involved in the world. And also I found out after injury that there were no supports in the country at all to help our injured officers rebuild after injury. Yeah. Nothing existed. You have to have died in order to get any services. So the sad thing is that we have officers across the country who have lived, and they know that, and I've heard this come out of other people's mouths, that their families would be better off had they died.
I just want to, you know, first of all, I'm really appalled at what you and your family has had to go through, and I thoroughly appreciate the service that your husband has given to North Carolina and in our country. You know what, it's interesting because I was just having this conversation today with one of our police credit unions in the POCUA, and we were talking about the Killed Line of Duty insurance, and we were talking about all of these things that, and you know, things are, you know, starting to come about. You know, we're talking about PTSI, we're talking, yes, about officer suicide, we're offering Killed in Line of Duty insurance. You know, we're doing a lot of, we're doing things with officer spouses. But yeah, there seems to be that gap of, well, if you're just injured, you know, unfortunately, you know, that is something that I've seen as well. It's if you've died, okay, well then, if it's a killed in line of duty death, there's all of these different resources and things to support. But hey, you know what? As you know, Randy Sutton and I talked about when he was on the show. Yeah, you just lost a leg. You know, you're still alive, man. You know, and then the officer can't even get a friggin' leg. you know, I'm glad that, you know,
you
I'm
get
not.
A prosthesis to walk around, right?
Yeah. You know, don't you have a piece of wood or something and a rubber band, duct tape, something? You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, it seems like we wouldn't do that for, you know, our military, you know, coming back from Iraq or something like that. Why would we treat, you know, somebody that is protecting us at home in a different way? I don't get it, but I appreciate the work that you're doing in that area.
Thank you.
Are you looking to find new podcasts, especially podcasts that are hosted by first responders or serious true crime podcasts? Then I have the podcast for you. It's the First and True podcast, brought to you by me, Ken Bader, former true crime category director for Podcast Magazine and founder of the Police Officers Credit Union Association. Each week, a new true crime or first responder podcast is highlighted through an interview with the hosts. Tune in to get an in-depth look into your favorite podcasters or discover new shows that you really need to know about. Where can you find First and True? Well, you can find it on all of your favorite podcast platforms, but easily find it at the Bader Training and Consulting website. Go to btcinc.net/first-and-true, and you will see all of the new episodes of the new First and True podcast.
And I'll preface that. Let me just go back and say,
please.
All of the resources that are provided to our families who have given the ultimate sacrifice are very much needed.
Sure.
And I would say they probably need more. What I just want to make sure I make that clear, because they need those resources and mm-hmm. I'm very thankful that they have them. But I want to also say that we are capable enough in this country to also take care of our injured. There is no reason why are injured or being thrown to the side the way they are. And there's just no excuse for it. And so when I discovered there was nowhere for them to rebuild, I called a lot of veterans groups that wouldn't take him. They couldn't take him because their 501c3 didn't allow for them to take an injured state trooper. He wasn't, because what he did keep was his... this is what happened. I was in the hospital and he was standing against the wall, you know, 13 months later, literally. I said, what am I going to do? What's he going to do for the rest of his life? And they said, what did he do before? And I said, well, he swam and he ran cross country in college. And I said, he loved golf. I used to threaten I was going to bury him on a golf course. And he loved golf. And they said, that's what he's going to do now. And I'm like, okay. So adaptive sports became our new way to rebuild, but there was mm-hmm. nothing in the country where the adaptive sports would take him, because this didn't happen to him as a child. He wasn't, you know, didn't happen before he was 18. He wasn't a veteran. You couldn't see that he was disabled. I mean, it only disrupted his entire brain. Okay. Mm. But you can't see that. And so he wasn't missing a limb. He wasn't in a wheelchair. And so he looked as if he wasn't disabled. So with the Paralympics, I did take him originally for the Paralympics, but they said he didn't have enough of disability, even though everybody else could probably drive themselves to the event. Mm. Nevertheless, thankfully, it's not that way for veterans. Veterans with any type of disability can do adaptive sports. After about 4.5 years, I found a nonprofit who adopted us in. It was a veterans nonprofit who actually adopted us in. And the CEO of that organization is John Warden. And I do not know where we would be had it not been for John, who said, come, you're going to be a part of our family. And so I realized he needed to be with veterans, because veterans that are injured were very accepting of us.
Mm-hmm.
We could walk in the room with a group of injured veterans and I didn't have to explain why my husband was the way he was. And so I'm very thankful to veterans, all the veterans out there. God bless you for your service. And I want to thank you. It makes me tear up for being willing to adopt us in. And please consider adopting in injured first responders of every kind and your law enforcement brothers and sisters into your organizations, because they desperately need you and what you provide. So I also realized at that time there was no research in the country in the United States of America. There is a lack of research on injured law enforcement officers or the people that care up for them.
Yeah, I definitely want to dig into that, because one of my mantras, and don't get me wrong, I'm a huge football fan, and, you know, glad that, you know, for instance, like DeMar Hamlin is not only going to live, but probably play, you know, football again. But, you know, right around the same time, I know there were a couple of line of duty deaths, and here we are, you know, sending millions and millions and millions to a charity that will probably, his charity, that will probably help a lot of kids. So that's a good thing. But he's on CNN, we're breaking in, you know, on ESPN and NFL Network to talk to doctors. But, you know, here we have first responders that have gone down injured or hurt or dead. And where's the break in on the CNN and the Fox News and everything for that, for exactly. Pete's sake? Yeah. So to my point, you know, we're creating all of these great things to protect athletes and to care for them after they've retired from the sport. You know, when we have all this research about head injuries and so forth, you know, why aren't we doing the same thing, at least at the same level or more, for our first responders? And it sounds like your research is helping to do that a little bit.
Absolutely. I was at a retreat yesterday. It's been a long day. Yesterday. Was that just yesterday? Yes. With a group of men and women who were caregivers of loved ones with traumatic brain injury. I promised them I wouldn't say something on the show today. I said, I'm going to bring this up. One of them was a mother, and she said that they saved her son after this catastrophic injury. There was EMS was on the scene. Thank God for our EMS and our emergency workers. The pilot picked him up in the plane. Thank God for our pilots that will take you to the hospital. Thank God for the people that I'm sure ran out to meet the airplane, the helicopter. And thank God for our emergency room staff and our ICU and our nurses. Bless them. But afterwards, there's nothing. They get thrown out back to the community. And there is no, she discovered there is no lifeline there. There isn't. There is no lifeline. So it's like we're saving these people. We are valuing their lives enough to save them. Everyone, all of us and first responders. I used to be an EMT, by the way, and I was a volunteer on our volunteer fire department years and years ago. My husband was an EMT.
Awesome. Thank you for your service. It hurts when I do that. Never mind.
No. Oh, boy, that was a long time ago. You might be in trouble. I'm going to put some pressure and elevate it. Okay.
Yeah.
But
it'll be okay. Anyhow, go ahead.
But what we're missing is these people have now lived through a catastrophic injury. Now, how are we collectively as human beings in this country going to make sure they have some quality of life in whatever way it looks like, with whatever help they need? And I promised, it's Zach's mom, I would bring it up. I would say, you know, for Zach's sake, for all of our injured sakes, we are saving them. Now let's give them a quality of life they deserve. And I think we can do it. So part of my research as a student, when I discovered there was no research in the country on our injured law enforcement officers, now other countries are way ahead of us on this. I said, okay, we got to do something about it. So my dissertation was actually on, it included caregivers of veterans, law enforcement officers, and firefighters with traumatic brain injury. I also discovered that there are no research studies on caregivers of firefighters with traumatic brain injury. And I did not want to leave them out. So I included veterans, firefighters, and law enforcement officers in this study, their caregivers, with hopes of determining whether or not we could use some form of an online intervention to increase their hope. And I'll get into that in a minute about what hope does. Their knowledge about TBI, about taking care of someone, because they are thrown right back out in the community with their families many, many times with absolutely no supports. And whether or not we could increase their self-efficacy or their feeling that they could take care of the person that they love or that they're taking care of at a higher level, that they would feel more confident in caring for them. So the study, we had 38 participants from across the United States, and the study did show that we can, through an online intervention, increase knowledge about TBI, and we can increase caregiver self-efficacy, how they feel about their confidence and taking care of them. Hope in the overall group was on the very, very near significant. I'm talking nothing. It was 0.1. Mm-hmm. It would have been significant. With a caregiver providing care with someone with traumatic brain injury that is desperate for supports, even any small level of hope is, to me, worth giving. Now, interestingly enough, when we pull out the data for law enforcement officer caregivers, it was significant and much higher. They had higher significance in knowledge, self-efficacy, and hope, all three. And in my heart, I just believe that our law enforcement caregivers are so starved for any type of supports. There is nothing that even offering them one small intervention online was proven to be effective. Now, what does this tell us? Well, we know that caregiving it in any capacity is very difficult. With traumatic brain injury, and it can be even more difficult just simply because of the behaviors that may mm-hmm. come along with traumatic brain injury. These people that are injured, these beautiful people who have a second chance at living because of our wonderful emergency workers, they are not the same after injury. And very often, sometimes, catastrophically so, they may have personality changes,
mm-hmm.
be a complete different person. So the person that walks in your home after injury may look like your loved one, but they don't act the same way. And they may have some behaviors that they would never do before. And this can be very devastating. I'm just going to say it. Yeah. It's very devastating. Nevertheless, our families, I'm so proud of our families too, because we love these people. And caregivers do not want to give up on their mm-hmm. loved ones. But a lot of these families that I know of are dissolving because it's so stressful. It is extremely hard to do without supports. And simply, it's going to take a community to help. So nevertheless, we have found that we can reach them through online interventions. The VA, you know, veterans have the VA, and I'm not saying the VA does everything. Don't get me say that. But at least the veterans at minimum have the VA that are in central locations. And with our injured law enforcement officers across the country, there isn't such a thing.
Right.
It's spread out across the country, and there's no like central health care. Everybody's, it's a free-for-all, whatever you want to call it, of mm-hmm. who gets what. So anyway, I was very hopeful that the very first study showed within the law enforcement officer community, those caregivers, that it's possible with even minimal, and a minimal intervention, was an online intervention, to increase hope in these caregivers. It's my opinion that we can provide services. We can provide retreats for these families, even if mm-hmm. it was only once a year. And I know personally from my own experience, I went to a couple of retreats that some other organizations that have now dissolved had like once a year. And when those organizations dissolved, the friends that I had made within the group who also had injured officers with TBI, we were devastated. Okay, yep. Keep that in mind. That only one retreat a year can bring so much hope that tells you I can do this for another year because I know next year I have this other retreat to go to.
Yeah. Thank you for watching part one of Taking Care of Our Injured First Responders. Part two of Taking Care of Our Injured First Responders will air next Wednesday on Public Safety Talk Radio. Public Safety Talk Radio is produced by the POCUA. POCUA is a consortium of financial institutions serving law enforcement as well as other first responders and public safety professions. To learn more about our association,
and to find one of our credit unions or service providers near you, go to www.policecreditunions.com. And always remember, if you aren't working with one of our POCUA credit unions, you're just banking with an institution that just so happens to serve first responders. As a public safety professional, you and your family deserve better. Find a POCUA credit union today.